I've given you a number.
Your library was one of them that had to do a third.
I'm gonna call the meeting of the public meeting. Currently present at today's meeting are Council President Karen Harley Nagel, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Tackett, Co-Chairman Bell, Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Durham, Councilwoman Cory, Councilman Corrier, Councilwoman Dill. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes of October 9th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. First item on the agenda is number 18-121, amend the grants budget appropriate $40,743.50 in actual program income to the community policing grant, which is administered by the Department of Public Safety. It's under sponsorship myself and Councilman Bell. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, anything from the department? Councilman Cartier.
This grant originates with state government or federal? Program income. Where is the program income from?
Is it federal?
Major Rob McLucas, County Police. The money that supports this fund comes from our police contractual fund. We charge $7 an hour for every hour that our police officers work. Pay jobs with apartment complexes, businesses, special events, what have you. That goes into this fund, and then I think it's once a year we ask to have it transferred over. We use that those monies for overtime in some of our tax communities. We use it for training, and we use it to purchase equipment.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Next item on the agenda is 18-122, amend the grants budget appropriate federal funding of $172,973 to the JAG Justice Assistance Grant, Fortifying Officer and Community Safety Grant for the Newcastle County Department of Public Safety. Any questions, comments from council? Any comments from the department? Moving right along, amend the grants budget number five. 18-126, amend the grants budget appropriate the monetary value of 400 donated laptops, $478,996 to local law enforcement, 400 laptop computers, 2019 grant for the Department of Public Safety. So under sponsorship, myself and Councilman Bell. Any comments, questions from members of council? Anything from Councilman Cartier?
So what is the life cycle on typically the laptop that the police use?
Mike Hodicki, Chief of Technology, Acting Public Safety Director. These are 40-year replacement cycle the state has established for all jurisdictions.
Yeah. Okay.
And it comes under the police chief's council, so it's our normal every 4-year replacement cycle for the police.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments from council? Any other discussion from the department? All right, next item on the agenda is update on the Police Academy recruit summary.
Mike Hodicki, Acting Public Safety Director. I've asked Major McLucas to address these two items. We want to bring you up to date on the Academy that is beginning officially tomorrow. They're in HR training orientation today and yesterday. And also we have some important information to make you aware of the Hero Health funding challenges that we're dealing with.
Major Rob McLucas for the Police Department. As the director said, we start the actual academy starts tomorrow morning at Kimberton. There'll be a total of 36 recruits. That includes recruits from 7 different police departments, not including us. We're the 8th police department. We are putting through 23 recruits, 13 of which are white males, 3 are white females, 5 are black males. We have 1 Hispanic male, 1 Asian female. It's one of the most diverse classes that we've had in a number of years. So it starts tomorrow and goes on for roughly a little over 6 months.
Questions, comments from members of council? Okay, and are you also going to do the next item on the, yes, on the agenda, the Hero Health Program?
The Hero Health Program, I know we have two new council people that may or may not be familiar with the Hero Health Program. We started that in May of 2016 as a way to afford people that we come in contact with, afford them access to treatment. The heroin epidemic, the opioid epidemic hasn't spiked yet. The deaths and overdoses are continuing to skyrocket. Since May of 2016, well, from May of 2016 until March of this year, March 1st, we had 70 people enter the program. We knew from the very beginning that we weren't going to be able to support this program utilizing police resources. So essentially for the first 2 months, we were using really part-time resources to try and carry out a program that really needed full-time resources. So we were fortunate enough last year to get a grant through the University of Baltimore. It was roughly $118,000 grant, and that enabled us to hire a full-time coordinator. We had an unofficial partnership with HIDA, which is the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area, specifically the Liberty Mid-Atlantic HIDA that covers Newcastle County. And in that unofficial partnership for the first couple of years, they had a public health analyst that they allowed to assist me, because at that time I was the coordinator of the program, to assist me in implementing that program. Fortunately for us, when we got the grant funding, we were able to steal him away from HIDA with their support. It wasn't like we were kind of backdooring them or anything. He's shown that applying full-time resources to the Hero Health Program can be a huge success. Like I said, I had 70 people come to the program when I was coordinating it up to March of this year. From March to currently today, we are now up to 199. So he's almost doubled what it is that we did in the first 2 years. The bad news is we thought that we were going to be successful in getting second year funding through the University of Baltimore. Everything we were getting from the University of Baltimore was nothing but, you know, positive feedback. We had an analysis done of our program by the University of Delaware, and all the benchmarks that we anticipated hitting, we actually exceeded. There's far more people than what we thought were going to get into the program have gotten into the program, and we wanted to really further have the program further evolve. When you have 190 some people in a program, they all have complex issues. It's not just getting them into treatment, it's all the case management, the follow-up with them, the support we provide to the families. It's very, very labor intensive. And quite frankly, we're starting to burn out Dan Moss, who is our coordinator. So there's a need to get him additional personnel resources to be able to manage that kind of a caseload. We do have a part-time case manager, and she's effective, but we need more. So the bad news was, when we applied for the University of Baltimore grant, we received word a few weeks ago that we were not selected. The consolation prize that they said was that we were the last program cut. Didn't really mean a whole lot.
Yeah, really.
And ironically enough, we were invited to do a presentation on the Hero Health Program in Cleveland at the HIDA Heroin Symposium. So right after we're told we're not getting the funding, within days we're part of a panel talking about the great successes. A bit ironic, but it's the world of grants. We have one of the best grant writers, coordinators here, and we're working very hard. We have great support from the county executive and his team, from the CAO, the chief of staff, the director. Everybody's working very hard right now to try and identify either internal funding to be able to maintain this program, but we're also looking at every possibility outside of county government, whether it be state, federal grant funding. We're looking at private organizations and other partnerships. So needless to say, if we were seeing a decrease in this, it may not be as devastating as it is to get this news, but it hasn't peaked. We've far exceeded non-fatal overdoses this year than what we did last year. Our deaths are up. One of the very promising things about this program is we do outreach and engagement with non-fatal overdose victims. And we do that very timely, and it's very hard, and you're probably not going to find it anywhere else in the state, where they're acting on essentially real-time data. So Dan Moss, our coordinator, he teams up with a nurse that specializes in addiction treatment and one of our police officers, and they go out, because we get a report daily, they go out to those non-fatal overdose people and try and engage them in treatment. Oftentimes, right after an overdose, they're not very amenable to treatment. They don't want people around them. So we found it's very effective if you go out there within 24 hours, 48 hours, try and engage them, and that's where we're seeing the most success, and that's why Dan has really succeeded in getting those numbers to rise. The other element of our program that you're not going to find anywhere else is we have been recognized by the Department of Health as a community-based naloxone program. And it's important to understand the distinction. There are two programs that exist. You have the police program, I think that everybody's aware of, where public safety carries Narcan, and when they respond to a scene, they can administer it. We have that, and our officers are trained in it. We have a number of officers that carry that. We have the distinction, we're the only police department in this state, and I'm gonna guess probably anywhere in this area, where we have roughly 7 people in the police department that are trained, the trainers in Narcan. So Dan and his team can go out to this non-fatal overdose situation. If the person's amenable to treatment, they'll get them into treatment within the hour. If they're not, or even if they are, Dan will train them in the proper use and storage of Narcan. And it's a different dosage than what you see police carry. It's a higher dosage. And through that University of Baltimore grant, we have Narcan that we can issue to the people free of charge. And right now we've issued close to 60 kits out in the community. It's very important. There's other entities that are issuing community-based naloxone, but we're the only police department doing it. We want to increase that. We need more resources so we can constantly be doing this outreach and engagement, because we know that works, and then you need the case management. So that's my plea to council. I know they've always been supportive of Hero Help, and we're looking forward to continued support as we move forward.
Thank you for that. Just for the record, I want to make sure to recognize the presence of Councilman Carter, Council Pro Tem Hollins, and Councilman Woods. Go ahead, Director.
Thank you. Mike Kodicki, Acting Public Safety Director. So the County Executive has reached out and spoken with our delegation. So it's all points pushed for funding. Unfortunately, Washington moves slow, so that is going to be a long-term engagement. We're also reaching out to the state. We've had conference calls with the state, and the state recognizes it's a great idea, but again, it's going to be a process to get the money. The most money we've seen actually come from the state has been in the Narcan to the fire service and now to the police. That's the only trickle of money that actually hit the street. So we need your support in reaching out to the state level, your contacts. We're trying to fund this program. If we get to a situation, we may ask for a grant from council members, similar to what Kenny Dunn did with the Narcan, to get something started to sustain the program. But the executive office is working with the major and the colonel to figure this out. It's unfortunate because we have a award-winning program, a national model, that they failed to fund. And this is just the first of us. There's another grant that was not funded as well. We'll cover that at the next public safety meeting. It's a successful program. It just doesn't make sense. It's unfortunate, but we want to make sure you're aware and consider potentially a grant to keep the program going until we can figure out a long-term solution to fund it, because it is showing results and success. Thank you.
Okay. Councilman Sheldon, then Councilwoman Diller, and then Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Great program. I brag about every civic meeting. What do you do as a follow-up after the 24 hours?
When we go out, like I said, we'll send Dan Moss, who's the coordinator. He'll team up with one of our police officers and a registered nurse who specializes in addiction treatment. They'll go out, and we're going to all those locations where police responded to, mm-hmm. because there are potentially some HIPAA issues if you're going to other overdose victims. We do it as a follow-up to a call for service that we are involved in. So they'll go out and they just meet with them and they try and convince them that they need to be in treatment. And the one nurse that we use several, but one of them is a nurse that's actually in recovery herself. And it's very compelling when she you know, meets with them and urges them to get into treatment. And we are seeing great success. Not everybody, but we make it known that the program's available to them. We get calls 2 days, 3 days, a week later, people changing their minds, and you know what, I will take you up on it. Once they get into the Hero Health program, they go through a 23-hour observation, an assessment, clinical assessment, and that happens at the Northeast Treatment Center. Once that assessment's done, then they determine what their specific treatment needs are. We don't have a set treatment program. It's individualized for that person. And we use all state contracted providers. And there's other programs around, but you'll find that those programs use only one provider, and it's more of a provider-driven program where they're trying to partner with law enforcement. Ours is a police-driven program where we use all contracted providers. So we don't alienate any of the treatment providers, so we get the best level of care that that person needs specifically. And that's where we're seeing more success. And then we have the case management, where we just don't get them into treatment and then walk away. We maintain regular contact with them. We get weekly updates on their treatment. If they have criminal justice involvement, we help support them through that process. Some come to us with pending criminal charges. And if you ever go before a judge and you're going to be having to plead guilty or getting sentenced, when the judge hears that you've gone through a very intensive program and you have the support of law enforcement to prove that you did, it can't hurt you. So, and that's one of the things we try and stress to people. Not the vast majority, but a high percentage of the people that we're engaging have prior criminal histories. The one distinction we have is not everybody that suffers from addiction is committing crime, but we know that the vast majority of people committing property crime, which is a huge issue in Newcastle County and has been, and we've done a great job of driving down those numbers, but the vast majority of those involved in property crime are addicted to some type of substance. And the vast majority right now, it's the opioids.
Of course.
So it's a very labor-intensive, time-consuming process. Dan Moss, his phone rings off the hook 7 days a week, all times of the day and night, not only from those that are in the program, but he supports the families. So the families, when they're stressed out, they don't know what to do, they'll call Dan at 1 o'clock in the morning because they feel like their loved one is in crisis. And then he tries to coordinate that. Currently he lives in Philadelphia, so that's a task, but he works very well with all of our law enforcement officers. So that's what's making it successful.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Dill.
Yes, I was just wondering, Mr. Hunicki, if you've reached out directly to the Lieutenant Governor, because this is such an issue for her, and she's been directly involved in all of this. If you haven't, I would encourage a phone call to Lieutenant Governor Hall Long on that.
I'll defer to Andre Allen, Chief of Staff, on that.
Yeah, almost immediately after the county executive reached out to text the Lieutenant Governor, she wrote back, we coordinated a call. So Elizabeth Romero was on the call. What they have indicated is they might be able to provide a little bit of bridge funding over the coming months. I think the state, too, is working through their own decisions on how they're going to enhance treatment options across Delaware and how programs like Hero Help fit into the broader vision.
Right.
Our point of view, to be frank, is we have a boots-on-the-ground program that is working and deserves consideration at the state and federal level, and Lori Kane has done a tremendous job making that case at the federal level. One other, I think, piece of feedback that we're learning is it's almost like we're a little too far ahead. You know, we've accomplished more in this year of implementation than perhaps was expected, and the grants may have been more intended for a quote-unquote startup phase. And we're beyond that because we've had dedicated public servants who are moving the process along at perhaps a more rapid clip than that we might have been expected to achieve. That's frustrating to hear, frankly, if I'm just being frank. and so yes, the Lieutenant Governor's office has been involved. We got, you know, perhaps a slight indication that there could be some short-term funding. The CJC will be putting out a request for proposals shortly. But again, that too will be a process. And so we will be applying for those. We got a little bit of guidance on how to best apply for those. And but that, you know, that funding wouldn't become available um, as, let's do as quickly as we can. So I appreciate the suggestion, and, you know, additional reach outs that you all might make to, you know, to the Lieutenant Governor's office would be helpful. I think, Major McLucas, maybe if we send around, and I can do this, the two-page fact sheet that Mr. Moss recently completed that kind of gives the overview of where we are to date. We could also send around the study. It's a longer study, about 14 pages, that the University of Delaware completed that talks in a bit more detail about the results. Again, it's a bit of a longer read, but it might be helpful for you all to have, just in case you're having conversations with folks. And again, the federal delegation has been supportive. I know Senator Coons' office has already had a follow-up conversation with the, help me with the acronym, the Office of Federal Drug Control Policy. But again, her indication was we're supportive, we're sympathetic, and it's a longer process for those federal dollars. So I think we're hearing sympathy, but we're not yet hearing an unleashing of perhaps all the sources that might be helpful.
Councilwoman Kopeck.
Thank you. I just want to know, what dollar amount are we talking about at this point?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I wanted.
So right now we're working on trying to figure out the position first. The salary dollars to cover Dan and keep him, because we do not want to lose Dan. Dan has been the key.
Is this between like now and budget time?
Yes.
Or, okay.
The funding ends December 31st of this year.
Okay.
And we were just informed less than a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, in AP, you know, all points bold, trying to find the funding.
Right.
So from a salary side, we're trying to work with HR and the executive office is working on that. From the program side, major initial needs will be on continued advertising, outreach, the contractual service for a nurse.
Yeah, we really need the contractual service for the nurses. So right now we're utilizing a lot of volunteers, and it can be effective. But I think to further sustain this program, to be able to pay them a certain amount per hour, we also wanted to create some pay jobs for our officers to sign up for. There was benefits there. One, there's overtime funding to support that. We can do more outreach, but you gain more buy-in from police officers. And initially, that can be a challenge because they see themselves as law enforcers, and that the outreach and engagement is someone else's. But we've been able to kind of turn that around.
We will give you the exact number.
Half a million
of what we could. Actually, the total grant cost was only...
We requested for the second year from the University of Baltimore $350,000. However, that was a wish list because they really did ask us for everything we could put into it. So when we went back and looked at it, we really wanted to just talk about salary benefits, and like Major McLucas alluded to, the advertisement is key. I know it sounds a little, you know, like advertisement word of mouth. However, getting the word out that this help is available has been huge. So we put $10,000 towards that last year. That's not to say that I'm telling that's our bucket wish list.
Right.
So we could absolutely give you a number to just sustain, to make sure that we can continue this program.
So it would be based on what you've asked for in a grant and didn't receive. You were expecting to get $350,000.
Correct.
So you know that would be the top end of what you are short between now and the end of this budget year, correct?
12/31. Now, we asked for roughly $120,000 for the first year. However, after going through it for 12 months, we know the nurses are key and some of the other elements that are key. So, you know, at bare minimum, you know, we're looking at that $120,000, but we need to at least look at some of the other factors that really made this a success.
Okay.
So we will get you a number.
Right.
Okay.
With our email, it says, here's a monthly sustaining cost. Mm-hmm. Keep the program, which will cover those contractual resources, the nurses, the pay jobs, you know, and we're working, and in Narcan, the consumables.
Okay.
We'll send out within a day.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Councilman Carter, and then Councilman Cartier.
I was looking for the number largely because I will be at a Christmas party with Senator Porter, Senator Hanson, and I'm sure Bethany Allwong will pop in tomorrow night, and I would just like to have a number.
I'll pick you up.
I just like that number if I could. If Councilman, not, I can go with one of these.
Yeah. Councilman Cartier.
Pass.
Any other questions, comments from members of council? Anything else from the department?
I did have one last thing I'll stress, is that the case management the hiring of a case manager or two case managers is going to be critical, so I think we're going to have to factor that into it. Again, when you have 199 we have today, people with all their needs, you're going to need the people that can respond to that in a timely manner, and it can't just be a damn awesome one part-time resource. So I think being able to take that $350,000 figure and being able to work it to where we need it is very doable, but we'll have those numbers for you.
Councilwoman Capati.
Can you just kind of a la carte it for us so if we have the ability to talk to somebody? I mean, you know, we're just saying if you had $400 million extra dollars at the state level, $300,000 is like a drop in the bucket.
We'll give you the elevator speech version.
As councils are, tweet Donald for us. We know he's out there.
Yeah, that would go really far.
Okay.
No, he
didn't. Under public comment, I'm on. Just tell the director. I don't want you to say I blindsided you, and I know you folks aren't here today, but next public safety meeting, I want to have a discussion about Corona, what happened, and see to it that we do all we can to see to it doesn't happen anymore. And at the point where, and I ain't mad at you, but at the point where it's necessary and appropriate to shut the bridge down and keep other people from being exposed to it, at the same time, we can't, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying, I don't know if it's us, Corona, all together, I frankly don't care. But if we can't notify the folks who live there and who are exposed to it, and at the same time, we're making sure that the other folks don't go near it, it's something fundamentally wrong with that picture. So, you ain't got to say nothing today. I want to come back to it.
With your pleasure, your approval, I would like to address a couple things, key things. Number one, I haven't personally attended. We had after action report review that was done with coordination with all state players, industry, fire service. Number two, we had additional follow-up, but more importantly, we are scheduling a public outreach awareness night coming up. You'll see it coming out very shortly. I'm working with the DEMA director, Secretary of DENREC, the Secretary of Homeland Security to finalize that date. It will be most likely next week. We believe it's going to be the 20th as the tentative date to make people aware of the incident, to disclose all the information we know. But we're happy to talk through it and let you know what we know about the incident and what we did on outreach and communication service.
All right, thank you very much. Councilman Carter.
This is for information. I wasn't aware that you were going to raise Crota. I think it's a critical issue. What I provided you is a map that shows the 1 mile critical zone that I see around all of these industrial sites. The state is in the process of reevaluating them, and I think as a council we need to have a discussion of the zoning in and around these sites. If we have areas that can potentially be developed in this area as residential, is that the proper zoning? And I think we need a review of that. A great concern to me, and also I'm beginning to wonder if we need to split our heavy industrial zoning, have a heavy industrial zoning near dense communities and a heavy industrial zoning away from that. The Coastal Zone Act, the state defers to the counties to define what heavy industry is, and to have these type of large storages of volatile explosive chemicals near our communities, particularly in some cases our environmental justice communities, is deeply concerning to me. And I'm very familiar with this issue. I don't know, but I think we might want to, for the health and safety of our communities, revisit that zone. I know you're going to be bringing in, talking with the Cabinet Secretary of DENREC and others. I'm just not comfortable. The one thing that we can control, if we see a need for it, is our zoning. And we should be looking at this to make sure that we take our actions to protect the health and safety of our communities.
Well, I agree with you, and you know, News Journal prints what the News Journal wanted to print. But the first thing I said when I got called was, Tom Gordon had fully intended and planned to fight this via the land use process, and when they became aware of it, all of a sudden, DENREC took it away from us, and they bypassed the land use process, and that wasn't accidental. And I don't want to start cursing, so I want to continue to have a discussion about it.
Okay.
Anything under other? Anything under public comment?
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a third?
Third.
All those in favor?
Aye. Let the record show you ran over.
It's Niecy's fault.